everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Uprising Review Podcast. My name is Everett. I'm here with Steven. We are coming to you live from the Mos Eisley Taco Stand. I totally flubbed that. But we are going to be talking to you today about something that Steven and I have had a little bit of a conversation on. And it's something I've written about on my blog, and it's something that pretty much everybody who has ever written a term paper faces, and that is, how do you know when you are ready to start writing? How do you know when you've done enough research? And then the alternate question, which is, how do you know when you've written too much, overwriting, which is a problem that a lot of people deal with. So the first question is something that I dealt with as a graduate student, which is, how do you know when you're ready to write? And that was the first time I really encountered it. It was many years ago as a graduate student when I said, how many books do I need to write before I'm ready to sit down and write my master's thesis or my dissertation? I've done both, unfortunately. I don't recommend either. But, how do you know, like, how many books are enough? And that's something that I think a lot of people who write novels have to deal with. When you're creating a world, how do you know that you've created enough of a world? When you are researching a historical project, like me, like I write historical novels, how do you know that you've done enough research? How do you know that you've done enough research if you've never been in the military? How do you know that you've done enough research to write that military science fiction? If you're not a scientist, how do you know that you know enough science to sit down and write that great science fiction story? Isn't that something we all deal with, Stephen?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I just have to say, for a term paper, I just kind of go for it and then hope it's right. But anyways, I'm kidding, sort of. Mostly not kidding.
Sort of.
It's basically what I do. I just kind of deal with I deal with the facts later and just get it out.
Well, term papers have this added beauty of having a due date. And unless you're one of those writers that's lucky enough to have a contract with a date on it that says you have to have your first draft in by July 1st, you know, you don't really feel that pressure. But if you're writing a novel, maybe you're self-published, maybe you've got a publisher that is kind of willing to give you, you know, a little leeway here and there, you can kind of flub it. You can be lazy. You can sit back and be like a lot of writers. You can be a procrastinator. You can say, yeah, do I really want to write today? But to me, that's like, are you really being a professional? Because professionalism to me, as a writer of historical fiction, means you're doing the research as well as doing the writing. Because the writing is only half of it. Or even a third of it.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And right now, I'm actually I've been wanting to write a story about, or that involves at least, professional poker, for a while now. And I run growingpoker.com, a poker news aggregation site. And it's something I'm really interested in. And so I finally came up with this idea the other day. And this was, I think, like last week, to write a novel about sort of the future of poker with AI, and kind of fusing my passion for science fiction and poker together. But of course, you know, going into AI and a lot of the technicalities, it's going to take quite a bit of research for me to write it effectively, and I really need to understand where technology and AI is going. And so what I did was I wrote down a list of things that I know that I need to know, and some questions that I need to have answered before I start writing. And I think doing that before I even start researching will help me to really say, okay, you know, I've done enough research, or okay, it'll help me to avoid that trap of, oh, you know, I need to do more research before I start writing, because it's so easy to make that excuse to say, you could always know more. There's always more that we could research. There's always more that could help us to understand a topic. But at some point, you just have to start writing it. And I think really planning out my research process like that helps me to avoid that trap.
Yeah, for me, one of the things I always did is I always gave myself a cutoff. And that cutoff did not come in time. That cutoff came in terms of questions. And my questions, I would write myself a series of questions. I would say, this is question one, this is question two, whatever, through five, six, seven, eight. And whenever I would answer all of those questions, when I had a question, when I had a reasonable enough answer to each one of those questions, I would say, okay, that's it, I'm closing the book. Because that's where I started. And even though I developed questions as I was researching, even though as I developed things as I was going along, I realized that that's life. You're always going to have more questions. Each answer leads to two more questions. And the best thing you can do is to simply put that cutoff on yourself and say, this is what I'm going to answer, and everything else I'm going to use my imagination as a writer to make up. I'm not talking about factual differences, because if there is a fact or a style or something that you just have to look up, that is something. That's something else entirely different. When I'm talking about I would answer my questions, I mean I would answer my questions in terms of what is life like in 17th century Japan? What is the role of honor in 16th century Italy? Those are kind of the kind of questions I'm talking about, not what is the style of architecture that look like, because that's something you can get a book and look at really easily.
Right. No, that's true. And I think that's kind of what I was going to say is, you know, as someone who writes science fiction, yeah, there's absolutely a spot where you say, okay, you know, I get the science in theory, and the rest of it is up to me to figure out and create the details.
Stephen, my question to you is this, is how do you know, or how do you as a reader feel whenever a story hasn't been fleshed out fully enough? Whenever the research isn't there to justify the story, whenever you're reading something about science fiction and there simply isn't enough science there, how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, for science fiction, I think there is a certain amount of leeway that we sort of give. We're like, okay, you know, it's science fiction. It's sort of a fantasy or a science fantasy, whatever it is. I guess, for me, as long as the characters themselves are fleshed out, I think that's the most important part. But yeah, if something isn't quite right, it comes across as maybe not convincing. It's probably the best way to put it. It's just, you know, if something isn't, if I know immediately that something is just off about something, it just comes across to me as very, as you know, it's very obvious that the time wasn't put in to make that aspect quite right. I don't know if that makes sense.
So the purpose of research, we could say, or at least you would say, is to create authenticity in the world for the reader. So maybe if you're a scientist who reads a lot of hard science fiction, you want to see the legwork put in, even if the writer isn't a scientist himself, you want to see that they understand the second law of thermodynamics whenever they start to explain how an engine works in their alternate universe in the year 2075 or whatever. They want to see that the second law of thermodynamics still holds. And so, you know, maybe that's the amount of research that a science fiction writer needs to do. For me, I don't think that deeply in terms of science, but for me, when I read history, when I read a historical story, whenever I read a piece of history, I think, you know, did they really understand the economics of the time? Did they understand the morals of the time? Did they understand the government of the time? That, to me, is what I want to know that they've understood. And so as a historian, that's what I look at and think, you know, okay, it'll really take me out of the story if they're not showing me a reasonable picture of the time period. Like, that's one of the things to me that I don't like about Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones to me is medievalism. It is the impression of what is medieval, but it's not really medieval because obviously it takes place on a different planet, but whatever. But, you know, Martin is obviously basing it on medieval Europe. But he doesn't really understand medieval Europe. He just kind of pulls things out of his ass. And that is, for me, something that makes Game of Thrones really a story that I don't enjoy.
Yeah, you know, I think, it, on that note, you really have to be aware of who your audience is and the type of leeway that they're going to give you. Now, obviously, you know, Game of Thrones is not for, you know, a very, you know, historically adept audience. But, you know, I definitely, I mean, that's kind of the point. I mean, you really need to, I guess the amount of research you need to put in, I guess really does depend on your audience as well.
Yeah, so that's a good point. You know, who you're aiming for, who you intend to write for. So let's think in terms of, like, do you read a lot of alternate history, or have you read much of it? Like Harry Turtledove and stuff?
Not really.
Okay, so one of the things I used to read a lot of, and I haven't read a lot of lately, is alternative histories. Is, you know, the Man in the High Castle type history. The what if the South had won the Civil War type history, that kind of stuff. And it's it really is contingent upon understanding the period. And if you don't understand, you know, 1860s, the United States in Louisiana, you're not going to be able to write 1860s Louisiana very well. And it's the same thing with a lot of, and I say this hopefully as people who are interested in writing fantasy or urban fantasy or something like that, if you don't understand the mythology behind the creatures you're writing about, if you don't understand the economic aspects of a medieval guild of Fletchers, you should probably look into it before you really go and write about it. You know, I'm not a big fan of what is that thing that everybody loves? The I'm blanking on the name of it now. It's not A Song of Ice and Fire. It is, and it's not Lord of the Rings. It is made by that guy from Wisconsin. Do you know what I'm talking about here?
Yeah, good luck. I mean, yeah.
Oh, God. This is going to have to be edited out, too, and I'm not even screwing up here. Okay. I'm thinking of... oh, fuck. The Name of the Wind, is that it? Have you read The Name of the Wind?
Wisconsin. No, like, I no clue.
Yeah, I think it's a book called The Name of the Wind, and it is largely based on medievalism. And it's kind of this story about a young man named Kvothe, I think is how you say his name. And I'm forgetting the name of the writer, but it's a pretty good book, but it's not something that I loved. But a lot of people do love it. A lot of people listen to it and say, or read it and say, you know, wow, this has really just knocked me out of my socks, because it is such an important, not important, but interesting book. Because like we said in our last podcast, and hopefully you guys have listened to that, we talk a lot about how to make a realistic world in the last podcast. And, you know, The Name of the Wind makes a very realistic world. And it makes a realistic world not in its detail, but in what it leaves out. And that is, you know, that is something that I think a lot of people could kind of benefit from, is knowing that stopping point is important. Get it right up to a point, but then just cut it off and say, okay, this is enough. This is what I've done. You use your imagination beyond this point. Because the writer of that, and I wish I could remember his name.
Is it,
I really can't.
Patrick,
I'm sorry.
Rothfuss?
Patrick Rothfuss, that's right. Patrick Rothfuss does a very good job and a very intricate job of creating a world that is believable, but he allows you to let your imagination run in it. And but you know, he doesn't seem to be a historian. I don't know what he trained in, but I know it's not history. I can tell you that it's not history because of the way he writes. But he is doing something great, and that's something that I think a lot of people who want to write maybe a big epic fantasy, a Brandon Sanderson style fantasy, could probably learn from, is, you know, research up to a point, and then say, I'm done, and I'm going to let you fill in the blanks.
Yeah, and I just thinking back to, you know, one of our older podcasts we did where you said, you know, for your, I think it was for your medieval Japanese book, you're going to give yourself a few mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I think that that's okay. And I think a reader is, you know, someone who goes through your book with a fine tooth comb, even will probably even say, hey, okay, you know, it's fiction. At some point, you've got to let just the fiction begin. And I think that's probably, I think the challenging part is that it's probably different for every genre, for every story. But at some point, you've got to just let it go and say, okay, I'm going to start writing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a corollary to that. And this is a corollary that I wanted to talk about, which is something that a lot of other writers deal with. And it's something that I've dealt with from, I used to teach, and this is from my students. My students deal with overwriting, and that is including too much information, too much description, too much prologue, if they're going to have one, explaining things too much. And overwriting is something, I think even George said she did that the other day on Discord, that overwriting is a problem of hers. How do you describe something sufficiently without stealing from your writer or from your reader the ability to fill in the blank with their own imagination? And that's something I struggle with sometimes, because whenever I'm sitting down and editing, I'm thinking, you know, does this really need to be here? Will they understand? Yeah, and this book I'm writing right now is Renaissance Italy. Will they understand, you know, 1492 Italy without me describing the clothing in that much depth? I mean, we've all kind of seen Renaissance Italy. We've all played something like, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, or Assassin's Creed 2, I think is what it was. We've all seen pictures of Da Vinci. We kind of know what they look like. We don't even necessarily need to describe it. But as a writer, I have a temptation to describe it. But the impetus on me to describe Renaissance Italy in 2017 is not the same impetus that was on Herman Melville to describe whaling in 1840 or whatever.
Yeah, and I think you and I probably have a very similar view on this, is that, you know, if it doesn't really contribute to the story, if it's not important to the reader's understanding, get rid of it. I know a lot of writers feel like that really adds a lot, and you know, adding extra description really is important, but at the end of the day, it's not going to change your reader's perception of the story that much. I personally feel, you know, when I'm reading something and it's just overly descriptive, or, you know, it just explains things that aren't necessary, that's when I start to get bored and want to put the book down. I'm not one that really enjoys a ton of extra, you know, description. Like when I pick up a book by Ayn Rand and I just start reading how, you know, the light was cast down, I'm like, oh, I don't care. You know, I get it. It was dark. Things like that. You know, it's just I'm very much one to go back through something I've written and say, you know, this isn't very important.
Yeah.
You know, the style of the door, if it's not describing, maybe the how fancy a place is, or something like that. If it's not important to the understanding of that particular setting, then it's not, and it's not important to the plot, then yeah, I'm probably going to cut it out.
Yeah. To me, the real question in overwriting isn't necessarily, or isn't always, detail in describing a room or clothing or something like that, although that is important, especially at the beginning. To me, the thing I struggle with when it comes to overwriting is, am I explaining too much about the economics of the world? Am I explaining too much about, you know, how the magic, and I've never written a particularly magical story, but I did write Into the Ninja, which has magic in it. you know, what if I explain too much about the way the world works in terms of, you know, my magical system. Like Brandon Sanderson, I already mentioned him, but it's because I'm a fan. He has a system where, and I'm forgetting the name of it off the top of my head, but essentially you kind of blend metals together, swallow the metals, and that gives you a kind of temporary magical power. That's really cool. But how much of that do you really need to understand the magical world that he's describing to you? And I wish I could remember the book. You know, maybe we'll put it in the notes or something. But, you know, Brandon Sanderson, read him, check him out. He's great. What if, you know, how much of that do you really need to know? What if you knew too much of that? If he explained too much about what was going on, would that really steal something from you as a reader? Your ability to fill in the blank and say, this is what I understand. This is something I want. I want to know more about. So to me, as a writer of mostly historical fiction, what I try to explain is, I try to explain enough so that people will understand the drama. And if I'm taking away the drama from them, then I'm doing too much. But if I'm not giving them enough so that they can understand, you know, the nature of honor in Renaissance Italy, then that really steals something from them whenever it comes to understanding how a brother would be impelled to defend the honor of his sister who has been slandered by a fellow student at his fencing school. You know, it's really a fine line. And ultimately, I think it comes from experience, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a very large element of just trial and error with this, is just trying to figure out what is too much. But I think it's important to remember that, you know, your audience will, you know, if assuming your story is you know, captivating, they'll, you know, accept things often for face value, you know, especially with something like magic. Obviously, that's a very fictional concept. And so you really don't have to explain, you know, how the system works in detail. Even if you yourself have that figured out. But, you know, I would say, you know, adding a detail here and there throughout your story would really add a certain level of mystery and intrigue to it.
Well, mystery and intrigue is important. And it's something that I really think you should make sure that you have in any story, even if it's not a true mystery. Because mystery is just a part of life, and that's something that we want. We seek as humans to answer questions. But in order to answer those questions, you need to be able to say you need to be able to pose to your readers a world which they can understand, and that is really the only point of research. That's the point of saying this world exists in this, this, and this capacity. This is the economics. This is the religion of the world. This is the magical system. This is the history that they had with this other tribe. You know, that is something that you really need to be able to do. Excuse me, so that they can kind of understand, you know, the conflict, and we can often get away from the conflict. But yeah, that's that is a damn difficult thing to approach, because what you need is the ability to give your audience everything they need to understand without giving them so much that you're stealing the plot and the characterization from them.
Yeah, and you know, a great thing maybe to do is just to, you know, pitch the idea to someone else, you know, someone that you trust to give you a fair and honest feedback, but you know, see if they understand it, and especially, you know, start for someone who's you know, starting out, see what they think, see if they understand it, see if, you know, maybe you do need to do more research, or if you're adding too much to it, just find out whether, you know, you're asking a friend of yours or simply putting yourself in the reader's shoes, you know, figure out what they know, if they need to know more, or if they, if taking something away would add that extra element of interest that you need.
But, you know, that kind of depends on the reader that you're going after, because, you know, if you're writing high fantasy and you're talking to somebody who mostly reads, you know, sort of, you know, mystery or something like that, they're not necessarily going to understand you. So what, so, and you know, that, that's kind of an interesting topic, and I don't want to get too far off topic here, but a lot of writers are in writing groups. And whenever they bring their writing to a writing group, as they often do in college, whenever they bring it to their classroom, they're going to get criticism from people who, A, are not necessarily that well-versed in the genre they're dealing with, and B, people who maybe are just kind of acting like assholes and want to kind of shit on you. So that is something you kind of have to watch out for. Because, like, I've seen people, and I've never been in a formal writing group, but I have shared my writing with other people back years ago whenever I was kind of starting out. I would share it with them, and they would say things to me like, you know, oh, well, it needs to be this, this, and that. You need to change this, and you need to change that. And I'm like, and it took me a while to realize that this isn't the audience I'm writing for. And taking their advice and taking their feedback isn't helping me. And that is really something that's important. So if you're going to share your writing with someone, if you want them to tell you, okay, I enjoyed this part of your story, they need to be well versed in the genre you're writing in my opinion.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I typically hate taking advice from people. I don't know.
Yeah, you're still in college. You probably deal with that all the time from your writing groups.
Oh yeah, I mean, I certainly have, and I mean, I guess I kind of think more back to high school about it, but I definitely learned to just kind of ignore what everyone says, but I think I do that naturally anyway in my everyday life. I sort of just do the opposite of what everyone says, and it works for me, but no, I think a lot of it is trying to figure out what actually works for you as a writer. Whether that is,
and that really goes to finding your voice too, doesn't it?
Because, oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, a lot of writers, the biggest problem most writers have is the fact that they write like other people and they never really get past that. So I think most writers had their Ernest Hemingway period. I think most writers had their Tolkien period, but very few writers really discover who they are. And that's, I think, probably the number one thing that holds writers back from being successful. And maybe it's what's holding me back from being a millionaire. Maybe if I ever get a better voice, I'll be a millionaire. But, you know, I think a lot of writers need a voice in a way that they don't really understand. Because, you know, the really great writers, the ones that you can name, the ones whose books you go back to time and again, they didn't just have a great story or a great concept. They had great execution, and that meant having a great voice. And that's something you're just not going to develop listening to, you know, the people from your writers group at Starbucks.
Yeah, no, and I think a lot of it, more than anything, is, and I think it's where a lot of writers today go wrong, because there's so many writers groups out there online, and so many ways that you can get involved. And you know, I personally, you know, every writers group that I've ended up, you know, maybe sort of looked at, just turn me off, and, you know, for various reasons. And part of the reason, I think, is because I see so many writers just get stuck in these groups, and they get stuck listening to, you know, advice from this person or that person. And I feel, you know, I feel like it really holds them back. And I never really wanted to be, you know, I'm naturally someone who doesn't listen to other people. I sort of try to make my own way.
Well, that is the danger of the writers group, isn't it? Or any kind of a little group like that, is that becomes your audience rather than the world at large or the fans of whatever you're writing. You know, like, I'm a big believer in the notion of writing to one person, so that one person really enjoys what you're doing. But if you're writing for the 9 people in your writer's group, and if that's the approval you're going for, you're really not going to have a lot of success beyond that small group of people. And I'll say that I've learned more writing politics and writing social issues than I have learned writing fiction, just because I get more feedback from people writing politics. Because one of the things I've learned about, especially writing right-wing politics, is that you're not going to please everybody, because everybody has their own version of it. And, you know, if you start writing a topic about, you know, European nationalism, so many people have a different version about what that is. Whenever you finally publish it, and whenever it gets up on the website, you're going to have 40 people with different opinions about it. And the fact they all have different opinions about it kind of means you did it right, because that means you have your own voice. And what I've learned from that is that people will track me down online and say, hey, I really liked your article here. Or they'll say, hey, I really hated your article here. And what that means is that I did a good job, whether they loved it or whether they hated it. It means that it connected with them, and it connected with them in my own voice. And it also means that I did enough research that they understood it. And it means that I didn't overwrite it. It means I didn't write something that was so obscure that the people reading it couldn't understand it. And that, to me, is really something that is successful. And I think that's something you need to be as a writer. Novels, essays, fiction, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, I remember what I was going to say now. In that same way, I've learned a lot from writing for different companies and writing all of the, you know, whether I'm writing their website or their marketing material, you know, and I think the biggest thing that comes from that is, you know, trying to figure out your audience, because every single company has their own audience and has a different group of people that are going to be buying that product. And that, I think that's one of my great strengths that's come out of all the various companies that I've written for and consulted for, is being able to figure out right there just what their audience is interested in, what they want to hear, and writing what they writing for the questions that they have.
Yeah. And so, you know, maybe we've really kind of circumlocuted the topic today. I feel like we haven't really gotten into the nuts and bolts of this. Maybe it was my fault. I don't know, because I'm kind of distracted right now. But we have touched on how do you know that you've done enough writing, but how do you not overwrite? And so I think now I've said pretty much what I want to say today. I don't know, Stephen, is there anything else you want to add to it?
No, I think I've kind of said everything too.
Yeah, I think I've kind of said that, and Stephen said everything. So, you know, if you have questions, if you have comments, if you have feedback, send it to us at podcast@uprisingreview.com. If you're listening to us on iTunes, recommend it to a friend, like it, leave a commentary or a comment or something like that. You know, just say what you want to say. We really appreciate it. Spread the word. That's what we're asking for here. Whether you're a writer, whether you're a reader, enjoy the Uprising Review. We are a free speech podcast. We believe everybody should have a voice. We're going to try to even get George's little communist ass on here one day and get her to do a podcast with us. But we're going to let you go now. It is getting late in the day for us, and we have said pretty much all we can say about this. If you have feedback, if you want us to talk more about it, great. If you want us to talk about a specific subject to you, certainly leave us commentary. We always love hearing from you. podcast@uprisingreview.com. If you have a short story you want to submit to us, submissions@uprisingreview.com. For Stephen Willis, I am Everett Foster. Thank you for listening, and we hope you have a good day.